Join me in congratulating the 2015 Aegis Award winners, Worth and Barbara Caldwell.
The Grand Ballroom at the Multnomah Athletic Club in downtown Portland, Oregon. More than 300 people are here to celebrate the accomplishments of older Americans who are making a significant contribution to their communities.
The youngest will be free today.
But people are here partly because of the accomplishments of today's organizer, one of America's foremost gerontologists. She's the pioneer of assisted living in the United States and worldwide.
What is amazing about Karen is that she truly cares. From the moment she wakes up in the morning until she falls asleep at night, she's making a difference.
Today's celebration also marks the 25th anniversary of the very first licensed assisted living facility in the United States.
My name is Karen Brown Wilson, and I am a gerontologist. That is someone who works and studies in the field of aging. I was born in War, West Virginia, which is the southernmost city in West Virginia, and I spent my early years there.
66-year-old Karen Brown Wilson's story is featured in the book Being Mortal by Boston surgeon Atul Gawande. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list for more than a year. And it tells the story of how Wilson revolutionized the way millions of older people live.
It really all started with my mom. My mother had a stroke at age 55, which is really young, and she lived for the next 10 years in nursing homes. And she was poor, so she was a Medicaid client, and that meant not very many choices for her. And when I told her that I was going to become a gerontologist, she said, "Well, what does that mean?" And I said, "Well, that's the study about older adults." And she said, "Well, then why aren't you doing something to help people like me?"
At the time, Wilson's mother, Jessie F. Richardson, was living in a traditional nursing home, which was based on the medical model of care.
Nursing homes were really stripped-down hospitals. People were in a ward. They were literally in a bed. They were told when to go to bed. They were told when to get up. They were told what to eat. They were told what they could do, what they couldn't do. They really had no autonomy. They had no say in their lives. And that was very dehumanizing.
Wilson's mother let her know what it was like to have to live in a bed with few choices.
She wanted to have her cat. She wanted to be able to have her Vicks Vapor Rub in the drawer next to her. She wanted to go to bed when she wanted. She wanted to have temperature control. She wanted her own things. She said that because she was frail, she wasn't sick, and she didn't want to be treated like she was sick. So I just did my best to try to make her life easier, but she planted a seed, and I began thinking about how could we make life easier for people who needed support, who were not ill, but who were frail because of some disability. And that led me to think about creating a new form of long-term care, now called assisted living.
After becoming a professor of gerontology at Portland State University, Wilson and her husband, Michael DeShane, also a gerontologist, wanted to create a safe place for elders like her mother, but also a place where they felt like life was worth living. They borrowed several million dollars to build a facility.
We built this like an apartment house. We built it with locking doors, individual temperature control. We built it with a kitchen. And so you couldn't tell from the outside that it wasn't a normal apartment building.
The state licensing people went nuts, telling them, "This is against the rules. That's against the rules." But Karen wasn't deterred. She camped out at their offices until she got them to give her a special license. And she wasn't through yet.
One day, literally, I was thinking, how am I going to do this for poor people? I said, I'm just going to go back and say I can do it for less money. You give me anybody you want to, living in your nursing home, I'll take care of them, and I'll do it for a flat rate. And you can pick the people to send to me, and I want to do a pilot, and I want to show you that we can take care of people meeting any requirements you have for less money.
And at the time, nobody believed this could be done.
That's true. No one really believed it could be done. No one thought that we could give nursing care in a non-nursing setting. No one believed that people would be safe. I mean, people were convinced that it would kill people.
Against all odds, they succeeded. Not only did that early facility serve lower-income people for a flat rate, the pilot study showed that residents had better health outcomes than those who lived in nursing homes. The concept of assisted living, or more specifically, Karen's vision of it, was born.
So, Jean, we're on our way south, about 45 minutes south of Portland, to Canby, Oregon, which is where the first licensed assisted living is. And that is a building that my husband and I built. It is a small building and it has 25 units. Canby, Oregon is a small farming community, and it represented the kind of place where people didn't want to leave their community could stay in their community and receive care. I love Radcliffe. It's like a child to me. There's something special about this place because I had this vision that a small place could work, and that meant they could go in lots of small communities.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm Lori.
Built in a wooded setting, from the outside, Radcliffe Place looks like a large one-story craftsman home. As you walk in the door, immediately on the left is a wall of photos of young adults from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, the current residents of Radcliffe. We pass an elegant living room, a beauty salon, a laundry, and a dining room with a choice of menu items.
One of the things that's unique about this is the design, because it's in a square with an interior courtyard, so you can't get lost.
In the beautiful courtyard with shrubbery and flowers, we see residents walking their dogs. Cats are around too.
This was the model of what we would call resident-centered care, where the schedule is built around the resident and not the home.
How did you resolve this issue between the residents' desires and safety?
I was told once by a person I respected a lot is that what we want for ourselves is autonomy, and what we want for those that we love is safety. And so we came up with the idea called negotiated risk, which we try to figure out what are some reasonable actions we can take to help people do what they want to do. So it's trying to moderate risk or manage risk.
This new model of care for the elderly got lots of national media coverage. Shortly after, Karen was approached by investors from Wall Street to take the idea public. For the next few years, she oversaw the building of hundreds of assisted living facilities across the U.S., which included 3,000 employees in 18 states. But in the process, she felt her original vision got lost in the desire for profit and the fear of liability if someone was hurt. By the end of the 1990s, Wilson left the world of corporate assisted living and started a foundation, the Jesse F. Richardson Foundation, named after her mother, to help underserved elders in the U.S. and around the world. The foundation's first big project was in Nicaragua. Working with an array of people in the community, Wilson developed the first assisted living facility in that country.
I began to think about all of the places in the United States where I knew there was no assisted living, where I knew there were no services, that even if we had a Medicare and Medicaid, it didn't make much difference because you couldn't get to it. And where did it lead me back to? It led me right back down to McDowell County, Mingo County, Wyoming County, where I was born.
Since then, Karen, through the Jesse F. Richardson Foundation, has been researching how she can help underserved communities in West Virginia. Gary Withers, an executive for Concordia University in Portland, Oregon, is on the board of the Jesse F. Richardson Foundation.
Karen, because it's her roots, is truly inspired by the opportunities and the challenges in West Virginia, and in particular, trying to find solutions for isolated elderly, elders who live in the hollows, elders who are not reached regularly by dental care or physical health care or mental health care. And she'll work with the local leaders and local communities to be able to craft solutions that are organic to West Virginia, that are West Virginian solutions. Karen epitomizes what it means to be a philanthropist. But even more importantly, she's an extraordinary American visionary.
One issue where Karen wants to help is with the number of grandparents raising grandchildren because the parents are addicted to drugs. Though the project is still in its early stages, Karen's husband, Michael DeShane, has no doubt that she will be successful.
Karen's is like Durbin, you know, very different than I am, and that's probably why we managed to stay together. I'm, you know, we'll get through this, we'll just do this, let's build a building, let's take our time, and she's, no, we gotta do this, we gotta do that, we gotta do this. There's just something inside her that pushes her and pushes her and pushes her.
The drive inside Karen Brown Wilson was nurtured in West Virginia.
I was born in war, but I believe that the name of the mining camp that we lived in was called Bartley.
She was the seventh of eight children. The family was very poor.
There was a flood. We lived on this little creek, and I can remember my dad putting me on his shoulders and taking me across this swinging bridge and walking down the highway to a coal tipple, and then we had to cross the coal tipple to get back on the other side of the river. I can remember the Red Cross coming, and I got a new pair of shoes. I can remember walking down the railroad tracks with my mom. She'd have a sack, and she'd be picking greens. She'd point out, this is one we can eat, we can't eat this one.
Wilson's father was a coal miner who got black lung early on. He died when she was in grade school, and her mother decided to send the three youngest children, including Karen, back to the hollows of East Tennessee to live with a grandmother. Neither of Karen's parents went beyond the eighth grade, but education was very important to them.
My parents loved to read. I think that's how I learned to read before I went to school. And my mother and father felt that no matter what we didn't have, what we would have is school.
A seventh grade teacher made a big impression on Karen.
Mrs. Duncan told me, you know, you could do whatever you want. You're a smart girl.
And you believed her?
I did believe her because my mom had told me the same thing. So that was two adults that had told me that. And don't worry about what other people think. And that was a really positive message. And the thing that I learned from that message is that it's really important to be thoughtful about what we tell children because they remember.
All but one of Karen's siblings went on to earn college degrees. Karen decided to go as far out of the hollows as she could get and received a scholarship from the University of Washington in Seattle. Karen and her only surviving sibling eventually both earned PhDs.
Your brother that's still living is rather well known in his own right.
That's right. We call him Rocket Boy. My brother's Quentin. He was one of the group of boys that was written about in the book Rocket Boys and in the movie October Sky. He lives today in Amarillo, Texas. We talk several times a week, and he was a role model for me. He was always the brainy one. I like to say that I'm living proof that the war on poverty worked for one person. I was very, very fortunate to get a scholarship. And my brother says that winning the science fair was what allowed him to go to college. So we both benefited from the generosity and the investment that others made in us.
And in turn, Karen Brown Wilson generously gives scholarships to young students. Not only that, her ideas and drive have transformed the way millions of older Americans live. Today, there are more than 40,000 assisted living facilities in the United States and thousands more worldwide.
You founded a worldwide industry. Today, it's probably worth hundreds of billions of dollars. People call you a revolutionary entrepreneur, the mother of assisted living. What do you want to be remembered for?
I would like to be remembered as someone who cared about those who had less than they needed to live comfortably. I would like to be remembered as someone who believed that you could make things happen if you put your mind to it. I don't know what else more I could want except to somehow be able to do more for others.
Where does that come from? What drives you?
From a religious perspective, there is the perspective that those for whom much is given, much is expected. My mother, this is a true story, when my dad was sick and we didn't have much to eat, a hobo came to our door asking for money, and my mom said, I don't have any money, but you can have supper with us. And we had oatmeal for supper. And I asked her why she was giving away our food, and she said, there are those that could do and don't. There are those that would like to and can't. And there are those that can and do, and you want to be the third kind of person. We always are able to do more than we think we can. And I just want to do as much as I can.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jean Snediger.